Almost hour, culture, current defense, our Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Lots to talk about this afternoon, of course, an unfortunately eventful weekend. We don't want any more events of this nature, but of course, the news of three Baton Rouge police officers being killed and the gunman apprehended and identified, and certainly an interesting the concept of sovereign citizenship, which apparently this guy extolled. There's something, obviously, there's a challenge with this whole dynamic. I want to get into talking about that a little bit and why, as Catholics, we believe in a certain degree of I mean, we undoubtedly embrace liberty, but sovereignty, not necessarily from the standpoint of being completely isolated, because subsidiarity, solidarity, we've talked about these things, these go hand in hand. What does that look like? Subsidiarity might look like sovereignty, but it's really not. Really done well, it is completely connected from a standpoint of solidarity. We'll talk about that. Republican National Convention underway. There are those still apparently saying never Trump leading into this. Interesting dynamics there. We'll get into all of that and more. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, back in a moment.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon, we're back. I'm Leo Brown, happy to be with you. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, culture, current events, our Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Thank you so much for joining us. Follow me over on Facebook. Most of the things we talk about, I post over there, retweet, which then goes over to the Facebook page as well. Far more followers on Facebook than Twitter, but you can follow me on Twitter as well. Certainly you could do that. And I don't know why, but it seemed like everything I posted today just kind of seemed to not show up with full links like normally is the case. So if you've seen some of the things that I've posted, you got to click there and then get to what I was tweeting. I don't know why that's the case, but at least that's how I'm seeing it. Maybe you're not. I don't know. One of the more interesting developments, I guess, as we move into this convention season is this bizarre protest. A couple of news outlets reporting it over on my Apple News feed. Apparently, as in the early morning hours of Sunday, 100 women arrived with giant mirrors, stood along the Cuyahoga River in Ohio to protest Donald Trump's nomination of the Republican National Convention. Did I say they were nude? Totally nude women with giant mirrors. And they were protesting Donald Trump's nomination, which I find interesting because it says this protest is part of artist Spencer Tunick's art installation and documentary, Everything She Says Means Everything, which he had been planning since 2013. So he has been planning this for over 3 years to protest Donald Trump's nomination. Is that how does that work? I don't understand that. Maybe it's just a protest with naked women. Maybe that's the goal here. I'm not quite sure I get it otherwise. Which, I mean, if that's his thing, then be honest about it. I'm an artist, and I wanted a bunch of naked women out there with big mirrors. That's what I'm doing. Just so happened to be at the RNC, which I started planning 3 years ago. Don't say it's about Donald Trump if you started planning it 3 years ago, because we didn't know that this guy was the nominee until, what, 3 months ago, maybe? So that kind of timelining just doesn't add up to me. Again, do what you want to do, I guess, but just explain it a little bit more reasonably so we can understand what the heck it's all about. Interesting stuff. That's not posted on my Facebook page. You got to dig for that one, by the way. I didn't repost that. The photos are there. You can see it all if you so desire. But whatever. Interesting stuff. So I want to talk a little bit about this idea of sovereign citizenship, which seems to be at least part of the dynamic in this shooter over the weekend in Baton Rouge and this bizarre movement, if you will, that it's certainly an anti-government. Some are preppers, some are in that mode, some are off the grid, but some just do what they do, but they just consider themselves sovereign citizens and therefore no allegiance to government, no allegiance to nationality. And apparently this individual had a degree of that as, a significant indication that he was part of this movement, which is certainly, I guess, large enough that there are those who are a part of this who claim some sort of connection to sovereign citizenship. And again, it's to me, and you will disagree, some will disagree, because I've been round and round on this, but there's a tipping point, I think, between libertarianism and getting into this sovereign citizenship. Now, those who claim libertarianism will say that I'm crazy and I don't know what I'm talking about. Just like those who are sedevacantists, right, who claim no allegiance necessarily to Pope Francis, but claim an allegiance to the papacy because they believe in the Pope, they just don't believe in this Pope or any Pope, pretty much in the 20th century almost, really. Got to go back to Pius X in the early 20th century. Then they'll say, well, no, we claim that. So I get that people will justify anything, like saying that you're protesting against Donald Trump because you've been planning it since 2013, even though stuff just doesn't add up. There's a lot of that out there. So I say that there's an interesting tipping point between libertarianism and this sovereign citizenship ideal, if you will, if you want to call it that, this concept that somehow we have such liberty as individuals that we are sovereign beings, not needing to claim any sort of allegiance to any one government and or country. And again, this guy obviously had other issues. Not every individual claiming this or embracing this type of mentality, ideology, would be doing something of this nature. But I still think it brings up an interesting discussion because this guy happened to be a part of this movement. And this is where I have a problem. So it's true of many independent candidates. And I kind of get how I may be looked at suspiciously as an independent because most independents are crazy. They're just completely loon bins because they've gone so far off the edge, off the grid, that this is where you end up, right? And it's you're a conspiracy theorist and you're so completely convinced that everything is wrong that you know so much more than anyone else and that you've got to take this position. Well, I take a position as an independent because of my faith. That's why. Now, some would say that's crazy, and I understand that. I get that there are those who think just being a person of faith in general is crazy. There are those who would want to think that, and maybe sometimes they're on that spectrum anyway, on the far fringes of independent, of claiming some degree of independence. But nonetheless, when you get into this mode of the sovereign citizenship movement, there's undoubted problems. And at what point does it go from a dissatisfaction with government to maybe saying that you're veering more toward libertarianism, maybe going completely independent because you don't think you fit, and you get into one of these modes? I don't know. I don't know where that spectrum is. It's kind of like I don't understand the spectrum of going, I'm a faithful Catholic and I want things a certain way. And oh, wow, you know, the Second Vatican Council should never have happened. Therefore, I'm going to embrace this idea of sedevacantism. I don't know how that spectrum goes. I really don't know. I think we kind of drift inadvertently into these areas. And before you know it, we're kind of consumed by it. And I can say that. I can speak to that having been kind of on that trajectory. I do believe there was a time when I was very ripe for sedevacantism. And I say that having had so much, almost kind of a disdain for the way things were and wanting things to be different, wanting things to be better, if you will, in my faith and more reverent and this kind of very me and Jesus sort of mentality. And then for me personally, it was a health scare that led me into a time of very sincere prayer and reflection. And I came out of that time not knowing exactly how sick I really was. It was the time I discovered I had celiac disease. And I just knew something was very wrong. We didn't know what. That awakened me to the fact that, wow, that was pretty darn prideful. Very, very prideful to decide that I was going to do Catholicism my own way, as opposed to saying, I'm going to take what I understand and what I need to embrace from the church as it is today in all of her glory, in all of her failings, but in all of her glory, and realize that there's something beautiful about this expression that I need to embrace and understand that this is how I'll be led to holiness, not by going off the deep end and not by going into some bizarre trajectory that really becomes my own desire for the way I want my faith to be expressed. And there are those who criticize individuals who leave the church because they think they're going on some sort of personal desire to find something more appealing, like an evangelical service with better music. We hear that criticism. But if what you're doing is searching for this ideal Catholic expression to the point that you leave the church but you stay in it, well, what's really better? So anyway, back to this sovereign citizenship concept and the fact that there are those who believe that they have some sort of autonomy within a country that they don't need to claim allegiance to necessarily, certainly a government. Perhaps it's more of a government than the country itself, but definitely this thought that completely independent, 100%, leads individuals into isolationism and to a point of siloing yourself so much that you don't understand that we share a common struggle, we share a very real opportunity to help one another and to live in that common unity. And unfortunately, you end up with this situation that happened in Baton Rouge over the weekend. We'll get back into this more in just a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, back after this. Redbox Media, now is a great way for you to go deeper with your favorite show or shows in our programming lineup. With our Friend of the Show opportunity, you get extra exclusive content from your favorite show hosts and lots of extra love from the shows and hosts you love. Become a friend of the show by clicking on the link on our website or app menu. Your $10 monthly premium membership will unlock an exclusive world just for you. Support your favorite show today as a friend of the show. Friend of the Show premium memberships exclusively for you with Redbox Media. Good afternoon, we're back. I'm Leo Brown, happy to be with you. Leo Brown, Almost Our Culture, Current Events, Catholic Faith, 50 Minutes, every afternoon. Follow me on Facebook, Leo C. Brown. I will post most of the things we talk about on the Facebook page, so you have time to peruse and comment, perhaps. This I found interesting. Looks like an opening of a new IKEA store ended up snarling individuals in the parking lot, I guess a parking structure that they have there, for about 4 hours. Finally, they had to go out and offer water to those who were stuck. And I've had, not in the parking area necessarily, but I've had IKEA hell experiences that I can only describe as just so frustrating that unimaginable. That you think, how did this happen? And the first time was before there was an IKEA even remotely close to where we are. And my wife and I, before having children, decided, okay, we're going to furnish our home as inexpensively as we possibly can. So we made a trip to Chicago to shop at IKEA. We get there. We planned like a few days around this experience and got it all mapped out. Got a U-Haul ready to rent. I had a new tow package put on my vehicle at the time, so I could actually get a U-Haul attached to my SUV. We had it all planned, knew what we were going to get, went one day, looked around, got everything kind of, okay, this is what we're going to do. Then the next day we went and tried to buy the stuff that we had intended to get, only to find that when we got to the warehouse portion of the IKEA, at least 60% of the stuff that we had decided to get wasn't even in stock. So, which I guess was good that 60% wasn't in stock, because the U-Haul was not available either. Even though we had reserved it and we had planned to pick it up, it was not returned in time, apparently, at this particular location that was next to the IKEA store. And we were told that we could go to another location. And if you've ever driven in Chicago, you know that the traffic there can just be snarled. And even just getting from one side of Chicago to another can be a two-hour trip, because it's a huge, huge area. We realized it wasn't worth the 2.5 extra hours it was going to take to go get the U-Haul and get it back to IKEA. So we, after discovering what was available, what little bit was available, we said, you know, we can get this in the truck. We could do this. Nissan X-Terra, not a huge SUV. So we strap what we can to the roof, put the rest inside, and for 6 hours back from Chicago, it was as if my wife and I were riding in two separate vehicles, because we were divided by boxes, by flat packed boxes, in between us, even in the seats, coming from the back of the truck all the way through. And the most ridiculous shopping travel experience, all of the above, that you could ever imagine. So sometimes, you know, I guess it's the old adage, you get what you pay for. Maybe inexpensive stuff, and maybe value for the fact that, even though, you know, you had to put it together, sometimes it's a trade-off. Definitely that was a huge trade-off. It was not fun at all. So if you head to IKEA, maybe be prepared for a little bit of disappointment. Looking at this story, trying to get my links to work here. I don't know what's happening on my Facebook page today, but the story about the acquittal on the Freddie Gray officer. As it turns out, this was, I guess, a fourth time in the Freddie Gray case when an officer was perhaps up for prosecution. Officer Brian Rice, not guilty of involuntary manslaughter. And as you know, there was something between the arrest and the time of getting to the jail where something happened. Obviously, there was an injury, something occurred, and as it is assumed, something took place in the back of that vehicle. Now, I have a first-hand account. I've been in a paddy wagon. I've been arrested more than once, more than twice, and I've been in cruisers, and I've been in one of these detainment vehicles. And I would say the fact that you're riding around, literally shackled but unrestrained, right? I mean, you cannot really control yourself back there. You're not wearing a seatbelt. You're not wearing a shoulder harness. You're riding around in a box and kind of getting jostled around considerably. It's not easy to contain your seated position even when you're back there. And if you were if the vehicle was moving at any rate of speed and taking turns, you can't anticipate that. It's not like riding in a vehicle where you kind of see what's coming. You can kind of brace for it and know what's happening. Anything could happen. So to me, the fact that more injuries have not occurred from the transport of detainees in the back of vehicles of this nature is surprising to me. Now, you know, it's been many, many years, 25 years since these things happened to me, but I can imagine that there's improved dynamics for detainment. I think you just kind of get thrown back there for a reason. They want you to be separated and away from everything, and you're being transported in one of these vehicles in a way that is it's pretty undignified and inhumane. And you could say, well, if you found yourself in that position anyway, then you probably need to be treated like that. Some would say that. If that's where you've put yourself, if whatever behavior you've exhibited has resulted in something of this nature, of you being transported in a police detainment vehicle, well, then maybe you deserve what's coming. And again, the fact that there haven't been more injured severely, because, I mean, don't we have seatbelt laws? I don't think we're supposed to ride in the back of pickup trucks anymore. I'm not sure that we are ever. Growing up in the country, we did it all the time. It's kind of what you did. Which I saw a friend of mine recently post a Facebook post of going to, as he said, going to Kings Island, this amusement park a couple hours away. It was always a popular summer destination, an exciting trip to get to go. And here it is, late 1970s, and he's got a photo of the family loaded up, or at least the kids, right, in the back of the pickup, taking this two-hour trek down the interstate to the amusement park. And my only response was, you did that too? I just kind of, well, at the time I kind of thought it was common, right? Everybody just get in the back of the truck. Doesn't matter how long the trip is. You just do it. You go. But yeah, so anyway, it's unfortunate what happened in Gray's case and the fact that he was injured severely enough to lead to his death. But I'm just surprised that we don't see more injuries, because how you contain yourself, and if you're handcuffed and you fall, you're pretty much not going to catch yourself. It's other than with your head. Right? That's kind of what happens. So I posted this. I can't believe that this is even a thing, but if you want to see it, I link this over on my Facebook page. $500, the price tag, for a smart typewriter that actually has typewriter-like functionality, but hearkening back to the early days of word processing. Very small screen, full-size keyboard, like a typewriter would have, and I guess the market for this are those who love to write. Even, I mean, apparently there's a thing for old school manual typewriters. So if you like the feel of the keys, if that's something that you appreciate, then this is your device, apparently. Not a computer, not anything that would function in the same fashion as that, but a typewriter that is smart, I suppose, for $500. So Wired has reviewed this and basically says the everything is amazing except for its ridiculous $500 price tag. Which isn't that difficult if you go all the way back 30 some odd years ago when these items first started being developed. You could spend $500 on a word processor and you were excited because it's like, oh, now I don't have to worry about correction on the typewriter and I can just process this and then put it on a floppy disk and print it, right? That's what we did back then. So anyway, you can see that again over at my Facebook page. More to come. I'll be back in a moment. Leo Brown Almost Hour, back after this.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Good afternoon, we're back. I'm Leo Brown, happy to be with you. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Culture, Current Events Hour, Catholic Faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Follow me over on Facebook. Leo C. Brown posted this story. Apparently, now in France, there are those throwing, I guess, garbage, rocks. There's a photo of this site where the attacker in Nice was killed. And the tough stuff is loving your enemies. It's clear that that's the tough stuff. Because Jesus even says, if you love those who love you, so what? What's the merit there? Pagans do as well. So grace has to be the component that comes into play to love those who are unlovable, who are enemies. And to even afford dignity to those who don't deserve it or earn it. And the question could be, well, who among us deserves or earns any sort of opportunity? But it's interesting to see this, and to see that this is the response there. And now there are those who, certainly of the Muslim persuasion, who are feeling the fallout now in the southern France and neighboring areas where there's Muslim communities that seem to be, unfortunately, getting a degree of Islamophobia on the heels of this happening. Even though this particular individual was from Northern Africa and was not of the region necessarily. Still a very interesting dynamic there because, obviously, a Muslim guy. And then there are those other news outlets that seem to be saying things like, well, there is this parallel. Say what you will, but so many of these things look alike. And I disagree with that. Yes, there are attacks that may have similarities that are perpetrated by similar types of individuals that we know about. And we know very well about, and they stick in our minds in ways that we say, okay, well, there's a pattern here. But the one question I asked on Facebook, well, what about Lakeisha Holloway? Where does she fit in that? She plowed into a crowd in her car in Las Vegas. Not a Muslim, but a very disturbed individual who was having some serious emotional issues and ended up doing what she did. What about, is it James Holmes? Am I saying the name right? And I think I said it one time, I'll never utter the names of these guys, but just to draw a parallel here and say, look, the guy who went into the Colorado movie theater during a Batman showing and shot numerous people, was he a Muslim? So I think it's easy to go, okay, well, there's a pattern here. Look at this. When realizing that, yeah, there is a pattern. You know what it is? It's called emotional disturbance. It's called people who are emotionally off kilter to the point that they're willing to do something of this nature. And they obviously have somehow gone off the deep end. So that's the pattern. There is a pattern. There's an undoubted pattern. Now, that might be simply because of something that has imbalanced them in their personal lives to the point that this is where they have now ended up, because they're so distraught, they're so disenfranchised, they're convinced that no one loves them, that they're hated, whatever, and they end up doing something of this nature. And we had a rash of school shootings 20-some-odd years ago that, in the middle of it all, we had Columbine, if you recall that. I think it was kind of in the middle of it all. It was not necessarily the first or the last, but one of the biggest ones. These weren't Muslim kids. These were kids who were disturbed, undoubtedly, who decided to do something egregious because of their, what we could only imagine, was some degree of disenfranchisement. And this was a trend. It was a something that we saw repeatedly. We didn't have a convenient scapegoat of a religion that we distrust or a nationality that we distrust to say, okay, well, we can put a tidy bow around that because look, it all looks the same. And unfortunately, that's kind of where we are now. That we look at these situations and we say, well, look at that. There's patterns here. And again, I would agree with it, only to a certain extent. So why someone ever gets to the point of doing something of this nature, we don't know. We don't know the trigger points, the escalation, anything that gets us finally to the point of making, it's kind of what I was talking about in the first segment. When we finally get to the point of stepping into some sort of really radical thinking, whatever it is, even the sovereign citizenship, a radical extremist position to take, going down the road of sedevacantism in the Catholic Church, an extremist position. There is an unfortunate trajectory that happens where someone either very quickly or gradually gets to the point where there's something extreme about their expressions. Can happen. But I have to believe that generally it stems from something not connecting where they happen to be, whatever that is. Whether it's, and I would say generally it has to be something from a relational level. There's something inadequate, something missing, something they perceive as being incomplete. Therefore, seeking some sort of solace, either in something different, something on the outside, or simply taking this into the most twisted expression imaginable because of their own pain, taking it into inflicting pain on others. suffering to others because of their suffering. Which brings the Christian ethos into such a beautiful understanding that our suffering is essential and redemptive. And it's not there to be reactive. Our suffering is not to be, let's use, I'm wrong, so therefore I will wrong you. I'm on the outskirts relationally to everything, therefore I will find a way to bring pain and suffering to others. Our pain can be quietly connected without anyone needing to know other than us and God. And that in and of itself, that redemptive suffering, that opportunity to offer the emotional challenges, which are, I think we would all agree, the most painful. Physical pain, we can sometimes even just tolerate after a while. Even those of us who have experienced chronic pain, we kind of begin to ignore it. But the emotional pain is something that is always that the tough stuff. But we don't have to make others suffer. We don't have to bring others down to a level of showing them what we're dealing with through prayer and true supplication of that prayer of supplying for others what we're experiencing. We can make all of it redemptive. Does not have to be wasted, and it certainly doesn't have to be improperly directed into something that is no solution at all. The real solution comes from our fortitude. As it's also known, long-suffering, the virtue that that is. And when we're able to embrace that, that can make all of the difference. Nothing's wasted in God's economy. Nothing is for naught. Nothing is just there without reason. We assign the reason. We do that prayerfully. And we don't have to say, where did I see this recently? It's not about asking why, it's about asking now what. Now what? Now we make this redemptive. That's all we have time for this afternoon. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Leo Brown. Follow me on Facebook, Leo C. Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. God bless.